This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation. Greetings and salutations. This is Todd Weber. Thank you for checking out Weber Has Issues, the podcast. If you know me and you've read my content over the years at placetobenation.com, you know I'm all about comic books and movies and pop culture, whether it be movies or TV or video games, what have you. We run the gamut. I like to talk about it all. I like to talk about Marvel, DC, Image in particular. Most of my reviews for Weber Has Issues are about brand new comics that anybody can jump in and read. Lately at Place to Be Nation, we've been heading towards more podcasts, and that includes our comics division. Our friends, the Hard Traveling Fanboys, the esteemed Nick Duke and Greg Phillips, close personal friends of mine, are doing a weekly podcast, and I'm looking to do an every couple of weeks, every month or so podcast. How will this podcast be different? Well, this is a little bit different than the traditional let's dig into a comic book and talk about it or talk about one particular subject. This is going to be an interview show. This is about you, the people. I'm going to be talking with my friends and people who are in the comics industry or people who are long-term comics fans that I know. Even some of you out there in Place to Be Nation can come on the show and we'll talk comics. So there'll be an occasional episode where a guest and I'll dig deep into a storyline or a trade paperback, or an omnibus, or an absolute edition, or we'll go into Marvel Unlimited and talk about some of the content they have there. But usually what we're going to do is talk about our guests and their likes and dislikes and history and comics and what they're working on if they're in the industry. So enough about me and about the show. I'm going to bring on my guest, and she's lucky. I am lucky to have her. Her name is Stephanie Hawley, and I've known her for a couple years. And she is an aspiring artist and has a lot of very cool info and opinions on art. And that's a part of comics that I don't have that much on. I can recognize what I like, but as far as composing art, no, I never got past maybe my sophomore year of high school where I could draw fairly decent male athletic figures. Like everybody who gets into comics can try and do that. You know, we can copy the pinups and things we saw on the cards. But I couldn't put together a story. I couldn't compose dialogue or anything like that where I could tell a story with the pictures. So we'll talk a little bit about that with Stephanie. So, Stephanie, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing well. All right. So how long have we known each other?
Oh, gosh. Let's see. I met you at the comic store. And did we meet before the location that you had your saber at?
I don't think we met. I think we met actually at that location.
Okay, makes sense because I recognize you at one of our friends' concerts.
Right, and if you're listening and you don't know, I am a musician. I'm in bands around town, and Stephanie has friends in my area who are in bands too. So we have a lot of overlap, not just comics, but music too. So there we go. It's kind of like, oh, I saw you there, but I recognize you. And so, okay, we must be fated to be in each other's lives somehow.
Yeah, so it was probably like around 2011, 2012.
Okay, yeah, that's a long time for you, not a very long time for me.
Yeah, it's a huge time for me because I'm just like, I can't believe I've like known all of this for this many years.
Yeah, and I'll get used to it because it just keeps snowballing and going by. But so let's see, how long have you been into comics? What's your earliest comic book memory?
Okay, it's weird because like my first comic related memory would probably be from the Batman the Animated Series when that first started to air. But my first actual comic book that I ever held in hand would be the Supergirl run. It was the 90s. It was the
Peter David. Got to be
Peter. Yeah, the Peter David.
That's
a great
story.
And the gorillas scared me. And that book got me in trouble at some point.
Really?
Yeah. I can't remember how old I was. I was maybe like 6 or 7. And I went to this after school program and I had brought the book with me and someone saw that I was reading this comic book with blood in it.
Okay.
And so I got in trouble and I got taken away. And then I just remember my parents talking to me later and saying that even though they told me that was bad, it was okay because I was reading and that I knew that, you know, you don't really punch people and gorillas don't actually – okay, gorillas do attack people, but they are not that intelligent.
Wow. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, that was really awesome of them.
I remember that series quite a bit. It was neat because it was an update to the Supergirl character where they took the Matrix or the alien Supergirl from – John Byrne, George Perez era Superman, and then gave her a human soul. They melded her with a personality, a Linda Danvers character. And it was pretty interesting. Peter David's really known as doing like a lot with not a little. He'll take these little ideas and he'll put a lot into them. And I enjoyed that run. I think I even got a letter published in that one. There were a couple.
Oh, really?
Combined. I think so. I think there was an issue or particular thing where I was having a breakup. You'll find, you know, I always related to ends of relationships, but I dropped him a line saying, I really appreciated this storyline. I was going through a health thing. It was pretty cool. Peter David's a nice guy, but as of late, he's gotten a little grumpier, as fans of Place to Be Nation podcasts can attest to. So we have a history with Peter David.
I haven't met the guy yet, but I got to – okay, after this over, we can look it up more. But.
Okay, yeah, I'll send you a link.
I'm definitely interested in that because I love judging creators based on, like, my interactions with them.
Oh, wow. Who's the most famous creator you've talked to?
Oh, Adam Hughes, probably.
Very good. Wow, I bet he loved you.
He was great. He's, like – he and his wife are so nice. His wife specifically, they had lost their luggage – but she had talked to me like a month before on Twitter of Big Wow during Big Wow of last year.
Is that a con?
Yeah, it's okay. A con. It's now. I'm so okay. I really appreciate the people that created Big Wow, but I have to be completely honest. I'm really disappointed with Silicon Valley Con, which is what they're doing now instead of Big Wow.
Okay, it kind of evolved or it switched over.
They're trying to turn it into Wizard World, yeah. And I'm not into that because I've been to enough Wizard Worlds. I don't need a local Wizard World.
I think that's what's happening with the local cons in our area too. People have been to the Wizard Cons, so the fans expect that, I think. But, you know, honestly, there needs to be lower scale, more intimate cons that people are not intimidated by and can be just really comfortable. And it's not all about cosplay. And that's what
exactly.
The Wizard Worlds
or celebrities
tend to turn into. Yeah. Yeah. And autographs and... I like big cons, but I'll never be able to get into San Diego again, I don't think. It's out of control. But Wizard World, I went to the Sacramento one a couple years ago. Now, it was all right. It was just a little big, a little bit busy. But I got to talk to Lou Ferrigno, so that was cool.
Yeah, Wizard World, that I remember. Was that the first one they did in Sacramento?
Yeah, you were there. Yeah,
yeah I was
I
there.
I saw you there. We talked.
Ethan Van Shriver was kind of interesting.
Yeah, yeah, he's a. We have a lot of Green Lantern fans among us, and so he is well thought of among our group.
Oh yeah.
So yeah, I didn't know he was there. I talked at that con. I talked to Chris Claremont and a couple other people. Neil Adams was the main one. I'd spent a lot of time with Neil Adams a couple nights before the con, so it was good to reconnect with him. And I bought some art for my kids from him. So
Neil's cool. Great.
Yeah.
Yeah, like anytime I run into him, although the last time he saw me was probably like Reno a year ago, and he saw that I had dyed my hair purple, and he was like, and I told him that I had left the store that we originally met at, and he was like, "How are you going to get a job with that hair?"
Oh, come on, Neil.
and then his wife Marilyn was like,
"Yeah,
Neil," and I was just like, "Oh my god!" Like I was just like, "This is great because like." That's something my dad would say, so yeah. I wasn't offended at all. In a way, I just kind of feel like It's nice to know that at least Neil Adams is trying, cares enough to just say that.
Yeah. Well, that's true. It shows that he cared about you. Speaking of Neil, you know how he came up in advertising in the 60s. And so that makes me think of Mad Men. And so I always kind of project, which one of these guys on Mad Men is Neil Adams, even though probably nothing is a direct analog. But you can see, you know, you imagine.
Roger.
That, yeah. No, I don't think so.
I don't know.
Like Stan or somebody like that, you know, an up-and-comer. Maybe on the younger side.
I don't know. Roger's so eccentric. And I feel like Neil is, like, eccentric in a way.
Yeah. It was hippie, not quite hippie, but pre-hippie, you know, maybe more beatnik, that era. So, I know, we're years away from those days, so we don't really, I'm not really an expert on the era, so to speak. But, you know, just imagining watching Mad Men and thinking that was Neil Adams' era. That was Neil Adams cutting his teeth in the New York Madison Avenue advertising world. Cool. All right, so when did you start your first Comic Saver, and what are some comics you remember buying?
The funny thing is I didn't start my Saver until I actually started working at the store.
Okay.
So I shopped at this store that I went to since I was a kid, so that would have been like 95, 96. And then my 21st birthday was when they told me, you're hired, and I was just like, yes!
Very cool, yeah.
And so then that's when I actually started my Saver instead of just going in every other week or so.
How did you read comics before you got a Saver?
I would just go in every other, like, couple weeks or so. I was very casual. There were certain characters that I just kept my eye out for. Mm-hmm. If I knew they were going to be in something, I'd just go in and buy it. I was a lot more casual, but once I started working, I actually began to start reading everything. I was a lot more picky. I used to stick to Golden and Silver Age and then only follow certain characters that would come out weekly.
Really?
Okay. Yeah. And then it wasn't until I started working, like, it was weird working at a comic shop. And when you start there, you realize that because they have a game half of the store.
Right. And a lot of comic stores have had to do that. Just because, you know, economically, it's tough to get by on just comics and back issues and trades. I mean, the internet is killing a lot of businesses, and comic book stores have to they have to adapt. And games are one way of doing that.
And so it was a little bit weird because there was the there was a guy that was the manager who assistant manager at the time. Who only read what he wanted to read. And then a month after I got hired, they hired another guy. We'll call him John for the sake of anonymity. So John and I had very different tastes.
Sure.
He was reading not everything, but he was reading, like, new stuff, mm-hmm. and he was so into, like, you know, he loved the gradient and the digital art, and I was so against that. But once I started to realize that he was willing to read the older stuff that I was reading is when I really felt, like, compelled to step up my game.
That's cool.
So that's what I really do appreciate as a learning experience from that job, is that I learned to be a little bit more open-minded.
Yeah, and not every store, I mean, it's tough because every store has different personalities, and we have the comic book guy stereotype, and we'll just say LCS, right? The LCS, your local comic store. But we should do an article on based on the guys you'll meet, the people you'll meet at every local comic store, because they'll fit into different categories. You know, you'll have the Bronze Age guy, you'll have the DC guy, you'll have the games only kind of person. You'll have the guy that says, it's all crap. All the new stuff is crap. You know, it's funny.
See, I was like that at first, which was weird. I was the person who's like, all the new stuff is crap.
Yeah.
Like, I was like a grumpy old man. And it was just weird. And I was like, I should probably be less grumpy. There's no reason for me to be this grumpy.
Right on. Well, what was one of the first books you would get into as far as buying it, say, from a newer point, and then researching back the history and reading a whole run of it?
You see, I think first time I really went back with a character I wasn't that familiar with would probably be when someone suggested I read JSA Classified.
Okay.
And I didn't really think that much about Power Girl before, and then I went back and realized, like, wow.
Oh, she's
had so many origins.
Yeah.
And this story is brilliant. The story is brilliant because it's, like, making fun of that. And then you had, I know we disagree on this.
Okay.
But it has the Amanda Connor artwork.
I will say I've grown to appreciate her. I think that, you know, she has a particular style and it's good for certain types of comics. And like, that's okay. I don't always read them, but not just women, though. I think, you know, she can tell good stories, but she tends to specialize in the Power Girl, the Harley Quinn. And it took some getting used to it. She's not never going to be one of my favorites, but I don't hate it anymore. I used to. So.
I'm so glad.
Yeah, okay.
She's my favorite, but I think anyone that follows me on Twitter or who has talked to me knows how much I love her.
Oh, well, you just mentioned Twitter, so we should probably throw out your address if people want to follow you.
Yeah, so. It's Bunny Meow Meow.
At Bunny Meow Meow. All right.
That feels so weird saying out loud.
It's okay. Well, yeah, are you, you know how on Twitter you can change your username, or not your at, but you can change your username? Are you constantly changing that, or is that always the same kind of thing?
It's usually Stephanie Go to Bed with no spaces, but right now it's Mo's Paws.
Is that a Morrissey thing?
Yeah,
okay.
It is.
I
don't remember how that happened, but I just kind of left it.
Excellent. Well, I like the Smiths, and I like early Morrissey stuff, but I haven't listened to him in a long, long time. But
I'm kind of done defending him.
You don't need to defend Morrissey. He's kind of paid his dues.
I'm just like, if you're offended, yeah.
Yeah.
You have every right to be. I think he's old enough to learn how to phrase himself.
Right on. So we talked about JSA Classified and digging into that arc, that Amanda Connor Power Girl arc.
And Jeff Johns.
Jeff Johns did write it. Okay, I do have that back there. Well, I mean, it's going to be pretty good. I remember they did a trade too. I should have gotten that, but I just have the individual issues. Is Jeff Johns your favorite writer?
He's not my favorite writer. I have several favorite writers, but just a quick thing I got to brag about
real quick
in regards to that series is that the second time I went to go visit my uncle in Vacaville, there was this little shop, and I'm not going to name it. I never name it because I still find, like, gold in their
right.
in their little back issue section.
So that's your secret. You don't want anybody else to.
Yeah, that's my secret. I'll let you know if we're cool. I'll tell you what it's called. I'll probably tell you after the podcast. But I found the Adam Hughes variant cover for that book.
Oh, I have that. Yeah.
Yeah. And the thing is, that's a very expensive cover, and Adam Hughes has gone on record to say that's his favorite piece he's ever done.
Very cool.
Or at least that was relevant, like, from an interview 3 years ago. But it's like a $50 to $60 cover now, and I got it for $2 because the guy is just like, these type of books don't sell. And I was just like, I will take it. That's kind of my collection brag there.
Nice. Yeah, wow, that's pretty cool. I have a couple things. Like, the last podcast I was on, I was talking about how I had the John Byrne's Next Men that had the Hellboy debut. That's quite a good find.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
And I have Amazing Spider-Man 300 actually, you sold it to me, a graded copy of that. So that's pretty cool.
I remember that.
Yeah, nice. memories. Nice. So
writers.
Vacaville. You were talking about Vacaville. Did you ever live in Fairfield or anything?
No, but there's a store in Sensoon, I think it's called.
Okay.
I don't like them because every time I've ever gone there, it's like they say they open at like 11 or 12. I've been there 3 times and they have never been open on time.
Wow.
And one time there was a kid crying because his mom promised him that they'd go to the comic book store.
Yeah.
And it was hilarious because the lady looked at me and asked if I worked there.
Yeah. I've gotten that. Like, people assume I work at a store just because I'm kind of talking to the people, but I try to differentiate myself. It's nice when they actually have lanyards.
Oh yeah,
that's
I was
helpful.
So proud of mine. I still have it in my like at my parents' house. It's on the wall because
right on.
I felt so cool and I made it myself.
Yeah,
that's like Photoshop.
Nice, very cool. So cool. Yeah. It's unfortunate. Some of the comic book shops, especially the smaller ones, tend to be not run as businesses. They're families, and you know, and maybe they own the building, or maybe that it's subsidized. They don't have to be super duper profitable. They're not really promoting themselves in any way. They just have steady clientele of customers. They can get stuff there. You know, the thing about the direct market, or at least trying to buy comics online, there's still that cool, fresh feeling of buying the comics on Wednesday when they drop, yeah, instead of, you know, if I was getting it from DCBS, Discount Comic Book Service, or something like that, you have to wait a week or so for your books to come. So,
and as someone that's been behind the counter, like before I was behind the counter, I really liked to go in the comic shop and talk to someone about what I was reading.
Uh-huh.
And that was cool.
Oh, yeah. When I was younger, that was really a cool thing, you know? You felt accepted and validated. Or you felt humiliated, and then that made you want to go and learn more.
Yeah.
You know, there was a long-defunct store in Sacramento called Comics and Comics, and they had Bay Area locations,
too. I remember.
Too.
Oh, yeah. My gosh. But I feel bad, because I know – the thing is, once I started working at I've worked at two stores, but just to be mm-hmm. discreet, I'm going to call – place I met you, Comic Store 1.
Okay.
For those listening. So the thing is, I've heard so many strange things from people about comics and comics from mm-hmm. people that either frequent Store 1 now or went from working to there to Store
right.
1.
Right.
Then I'm just like, I can't believe this guy that ran the store existed.
Yeah, yeah. I've heard many stories. I didn't experience a whole lot of stuff, but I did know some of the guys, and they were generally pretty cool.
It was the owner that I heard. Was
yeah.
Like,
yeah, and I heard the similar stories. But, you know, I can't verify any of those things. And unfortunately, I've said the name of the place, so if somebody hears that, oh, no. These are just rumors and hearsay, and the statute of limitations is long since passed. So,
yeah.
Comics and Comics went away about 20 years ago at this point.
And my so-called life is now on DVD. That's one of the rumors. Can I say the rumor?
Go ahead and say
just
the rumor.
Just because
it's
sure. so amusing? Okay. There's a rumor that the guy that ran the store apparently had bought the rights to My So-Called Life back when DVDs weren't around.
Really? Wow.
Yeah.
That's
and
ambitious.
Yeah. And the rumor was that he was like putting out ads for people to send him money so they could have it on VHS. And rumor has it that the people that paid never received it.
Wow. That's
and
a crazy rumor.
Yeah. And that he apparently had some legal battle with it. Whether that's true or not, I don't know, but I've heard it from more than one, like about
wow.
three different people. Which I'm just like, that is the most random thing I've ever heard, but still like something that kind of, it's kind of funny,
mm-hmm.
but at the same, it's not funny for the people that lost their
no.
money.
In the early days of the internet, you know, a entrepreneur would register a domain before the actual company would do it. Say Sears, right? Somebody would register Sears.com, and they'd hold that site hostage until, you know, the company would bid enough to get it, or they'd just have to wait for it to expire. I forget what they called that.
Oh, yeah. I think Jeb Bush had that problem.
Really? Oh, yeah he did.
During his election, it expired and someone bought it.
And it directed to Trump, which was funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, we won't talk politics too much just
no.
because we there are
no.
other shows for that. But
I
it
think
is
there's
funny
enough
story.
Of that in comics right
yeah.
now.
Oh, no kidding. Yeah, if you're on Twitter. And that's the thing. So the comics landscape has changed so much because you know what the creators are, where they are, not just politically, but socially. And we were just recently talking about how a high-profile creator was having a feud with the writers of the Flash TV show because he didn't like the way a certain storyline was going, and it was besmirching Jay Garrick's good name. And
let them tell
their story. Oh, it's a big story. Yeah, I'll tell you off the air because I was told not to mention names. And my friend Russell Sellers has gone into detail on that on an earlier podcast. So, yeah. All right. Well, that's a good start to our story. you got into the JSA series, the JSA classified series, Jeff Johns, Amanda Connor. I was going to say, talking about Vacaville Fairfield, one of my favorite professional wrestlers was actually born in Fairfield. I bet you didn't know this. And listeners, I don't know if you know this, but Stephanie's into NXT wrestling and some WWE, right?
Yeah, it's funny because I went to – there's this bar, shout out to Carbones in Monterey.
Nice.
Because they'll be cool with that. I found out that they have apparently do pay-per-view events there, and I had no idea. But the guy that runs it, ended up telling me that. Oh my gosh, I'm sorry, I completely lost my train of thought. This was relevant. Oh no, the way I explained it. Can you edit that out?
I can't, but we'll talk over it. So we're talking.
Okay.
your experience with WWE NXT.
Okay, so the way I explained it to him is I began watching in a not that long ago, like maybe September.
Okay.
And then I started taking it seriously, and then I kind of put myself on a crash course.
Hmm.
So mostly, like, I'd say probably October on is when since I've been watching weekly. And so I super got into it because of Asuka.
Very cool.
I love Asuka, and it's really cool to see Shinsuke up there now, which is pretty cool. And we have to, oh gosh, I feel so bad.
No, it's okay.
So Payback just happened.
Yes, we can talk about that.
Okay, we can talk. Okay.
Yeah. Did you see it?
Yes, okay. I felt so bad. And the thing is, I work at a job that allows me a lot of extra free time.
So you have, you watch the network at work.
Yes, okay. I watch WWE
Excellent.
Network.
That's awesome.
But the thing that sucks is, like, we were having a very hectic day, so I had to get some paperwork done, and so I looked away from the screen for a moment, and then all I hear is, like, the announcers are losing it, and then I see
Enzo.
Enzo was struck out by Simon.
Yeah, it was kind of a trip. We thought initially, there's no way that's legit. There's no way that's pretend. He hit so hard, you know, and... But they had the cameras on it, and they kept showing the replay of it. So Weber Has Issues has become temporarily a wrestling podcast. That's okay, because it's relevant.
And, it is.
And New Day are right there watching the match.
They like comics. Right in front of it. It's related.
They do, yeah. Big E, hey, shout out to Big E if you're ever listening to this. But yeah, it was kind of a trip. It's kind of sad. But Enzo, did you see the whole hubbub with him? And the concussion and getting out of the hospital and everything. It was so cool.
Yeah. I love that Kevin Owens tweet.
Isn't that great? Yeah.
That one was my favorite.
Yeah. There's a whole bunch of that right now. So, you know, they're putting him on different famous scenes of history now. So I need to do one with the Lee Harvey Oswald shooting.
And this is really bad, but I felt really bad for Simon at the same time.
Yeah.
Because it's like, I haven't been watching wrestling enough to really understand how they react to modern day injuries. But it's like, Enzo's career could be over.
Yeah.
But does that mean Simon's career is going to be over too?
Sometimes, you know, they have to look, well, whose fault was it, you know?
Exactly, and I don't know how to tell that.
Recently we had that happen not too long ago with Samoa Joe and Tyson Kidd. Samoa Joe wrestled a match on Superstars and basically broke Tyson Kidd's neck in Samoa Joe's first call-up match on TV, WWE TV. And, you know, notice he's been in NXT. He's working his way back up. He's the current NXT champ. But
With the house show thing, too?
Yeah.
I know a lot of people are speculating the reason why they gave the title match away at a house show was because of the injury.
Because Finn was injured, or?
I can't remember the exact theory, but I remember there's something going on about, like, someone was injured, so that's why they ended up doing it at a house show.
Yeah, it was speculated that Finn was injured, and he may be. But I think right now they're in the age of trying to keep everybody guessing. They're really trying to work us, trying to make letting us not know what's coming next. Because we thought Finn would show up at Payback. We thought he would show up, other things. Everybody knows he's coming. We know Bailey's coming pretty soon.
I thought she would. They're trying. Okay. I saw online the other day someone's like, Bailey might have actually been injured. And I was like, okay.
Yeah.
I didn't see any, like, ambulance tweets. Mm-hmm. And I know this is really bad, but it's like, you can't really fake it as easily with social media.
Right. And that's the thing. It's become a game. They're always trying to work us or trying to get us to speculate and blur the lines as they speak. So cool. So that's awesome. You love wrestling, but Sasha Banks is actually from Fairfield.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
I know. I learned that on Jericho's podcast with her. So that was pretty cool. Shout out to NorCal, my girl Sasha Banks, who I got to see at WrestleMania 32 down in Dallas. She was in the match with Becky Lynch and Charlotte, and it was the best match of the show, I think. I don't know. Did you?
Yeah, it was like no one in that ring was incredibly unlikable.
Yeah, you have to respect Charlotte's athleticism, and
you do.
And she's come a long way as being a heel and working with her dad. And that moonsault she hit, you know, she did the backflip off the turnbuckle to the floor, was perfect, picture perfect. You know, she's almost 6 feet tall, if not 6 feet tall.
Yeah.
And she's in amazing shape. She's a gymnast. You got to respect her athleticism, and she's become a really good pro wrestler. So it's a good time to be a women's wrestling fan.
Exactly. Yeah. Although I got to bring up what happened on NXT last week.
Sounds good.
Let me see. Let me check the date. So that would have been last Wednesday. So it would have been April 27th?
I think so.
Yeah. So the thing with Eva Marie, that was really awkward. The Eva Marie and Asuka match when everyone was shouting, Eva sucks.
Well,
Eva, I know she's really bad at it, and I just kind of feel for her,
mm-hmm.
because she still gets up every day and does this job,
she's not good at it. I know. Who do you think is hated more by the fans, Eva Marie or Roman Reigns?
Oh, gosh. Oh, wow.
Or is it the same thing, just a male version and a female version? And do you have an opinion why they hate each of them, either of them?
I have to say, I feel like Eva Marie's hate is more concentrated because NXT, when you follow NXT, you get a lot. I feel like the people that watch NXT are a little bit more passionate.
They're pretty passionate. I know there are some wrestlers that don't like how entitled the Orlando NXT fans seem to be.
Yeah, it's a different crowd, and mm-hmm. I feel like the hate for Roman Reigns is very like casual. Like I mean, I'm tired of it, but I don't look at it and think, oh God, this guy. I'm just like, well, I do think, oh God, this guy, that guy. Okay. Whatever. His little speech thing. Just like, no, you're just a boring guy. With Eva, it's like, I just respect that you're here.
Yeah.
I respect that you try, but there's not much else.
Right. It doesn't seem like she's going to get it if she gets it. She's been there for a couple years. I enjoyed the match with her and Bayley just because it was a big swerve. Again, there's that word, by the bookers. You know, we were all led to think that she was even going to have a chance and turned out to be a great squash. It was terrific. But I think it's just the fans feel like that certain wrestlers don't deserve what they've been given in the storylines or on screen. They haven't necessarily earned their spot. I think that's what
Send her to boot camp.
Yeah.
Like seriously, like I went to fat camp when I was a kid. Send her to like wrestling camp, and have her like come back later, like or something.
Yeah. I mean, she's down there at NXT, and they are no slouches. They've got to be working out. Sarah Del Rey, right? They're the women's trainer. She's a badass. So
I know, but why can't they just make Eva Marie better?
I know.
I'm like, come on.
I agree. I think part of it may be the personality too. You know?
I think she's there for the wrong reasons.
Yeah, okay. Trying to become a star through wrestling.
Well, yeah, because I heard her talk once, and I think she said something along the lines of, I want to bring high fashion to... And I'm like, this is WWE. Unless you're Stephanie McMahon, no one else is wearing, like, Gucci when they're walking out.
Yeah, I think Maurice maybe at this point, but she's fat.
I love her costume.
Oh, she's great. Yeah, and she's a heat magnet. You watch her, she knows how to work the crowd and do that thing with her throwing her head back. And
She's pretty cool. And I was just talking to my boyfriend about this last night. Is I paused Raw and I told him to look at Lana and her clothes. And I'm like, okay, my issue with Lana is that this looks so 90s tacky.
Uh-huh.
Is it just, am I just being like judgmental, or does that seriously look tacky? And he looked at it and it's like, yeah, she's in a like midriff business suit,
mm-hmm.
with lace that has like, doesn't really, it's like red and black and it just looks weird. It's like, ugh. Like, because I think Lana's really, it was hilarious with that Sami Zayn match where she took off her shoes and started throwing them.
Yes.
But her outfit just looks so, like, so dated. And I'm just like, come on. Like, there's so many other women who are better dressed. Like, just give her a better looking outfit. At least change the fabric to not be so gross looking.
Starting out, it was a very conservative look. Or it was still, you know, I'll say sexy. But it was very conservative, very uptight. And that was, I think, the appeal. You know, you had that Rocky IV. If you've ever seen Rocky IV, it's the, you know, Rocky versus the Russians. And Brigitte Nielsen played a very straight-laced but still very attractive Russian woman. And, you know, Lana, they've kind of turned her into a hybrid thing ever since they paired her with Dolph Ziggler in that horribly botched storyline where Lana and Rusev's Instagram kind of revealed that they were really together, even though on
Vince
TV.
Vince did not like that.
Yeah. Oh, no. He saw Lana disappear for a while. But
I don't think, for them.
Style-wise, I don't know how much of it is them saying, okay, you wear this, or Lana saying, no, I must wear, this is my clothes.
Well, the thing is, they could have done the conservative thing, just like unbutton a couple buttons and have something like cute underneath.
Yeah, a couple minutes ago when you mentioned you had a boyfriend, I just heard a whole bunch of hearts break across the Place to Be Nation, Stephanie. So,
we'll see.
Probably a good time to take a break. So, we're going to take a quick break and let you hear some promos for other shows on Place to Be Nation. But we hope you're enjoying this first official episode of Weber Has Issues with Stephanie Hawley. I am Todd Weber, and you can reach me on Twitter at Todd Weber Guitar or at tweber@placetobenation.com. And we hope you're enjoying the show. We'll talk to you in a few minutes.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of The Kevin Kelly Show right here on the Place to Be Nation, placetobenation.com. The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner. At least we hope.
Place to Be Nation's Justin Rosero here. In addition to The Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes and placetobenation.com. You can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, with our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with Main Event, Mission Indie Possible, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows with immediate feedback on WWE, NXT, and Ring of Honor Super Shows. And relive wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series, led by Ben Morse, and the Dangerous Alliance Wrestling podcast as we dive into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. We got sports covered, too, with the Sports Evolution Mega Show with Scott, Dr. G, Cowboy, and Cowboy Sr., The Kings of Sport, led by Live Audio Wrestling's godfather Nate Milton, as well as the NBA Team Podcast and the TJ McClune Show. PTBN tackles pop culture and irreverence with Richard and the Mailman, the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, and if you like a hybrid of all of this in list form, check out Jordan Duncan's Rank and File. All of these shows are available on PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tourneaments and more. We want to thank our friends at Boneheads Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, in Fall River, Massachusetts, and Scott Keith's Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
This is Parv, and I'm here to tell you to listen and subscribe to the Pro Wrestling Only Place to Be Nation Podcast Network. That's the PWO PTBN Podcast Network, where you'll find a ton of in-depth shows done by hardcore fans. We've got Chris Zellner's 1-2 Punch of Exile on Bad Street, and with David Bickenspan, a smash hit Between the Sheets. We've got Wrestling Culture with Dylan Hales and Dave Musgrave, Goodwill Wrestling and the Reaction Shows with Good Old Will from Texas. We got This Week in Wrestling with my man Pete and Johnny Sorrow, Stephen Graham and Tim Livingston's Pro Wrestling Super Show, Tag Teams Back Again with Kelly and Marty Sleaze, and a ton of other great shows too. And of course, there's Titans of Wrestling and Where the Big Boys Play with yours truly and some dude from down south called Chad. PWO, PTBN, Podcast Network.
Yeah.
talking about comics, and we keep going off on the wrestling tangent, which is fine. This is pretty cool. I don't get to talk wrestling with too many friends in my real world life, mostly just my online friends' life. So Stephanie is a real world friend who I've met and hung out with. So we will continue to talk about these things in our Weber House Issues comic conversation. I think that's what I'm calling it at this point. We'll see if it evolves. And we were glad to talk writers. I asked her if Jeff Johns was one of her favorite writers, and she said he's up there, but he's not her favorite. So who are some of your favorites, if not your favorites?
Okay, so I've prepared this.
Okay.
Let's see. I got to say, these are pretty obvious. O'Neill, Wolfman, because, wow. I mean, for Wolfman, the Teen Titans, I think, is... I feel like that run is more relevant to... I don't know. I always loved the relationship between Dick Grayson and Starfire.
Nice. That's very cool.
And I feel like that is more of a... Like, when they get... Like, later on in the series, when they actually start to get serious, I feel like that's more of a realistic idea of a relationship.
Okay.
Than sometimes you see with some of the, like, new teen books.
Yes, yeah.
You see
now,
like Barbara should not have to choose between... Okay.
Are we talking Batgirl of Burnside?
Yes, we're talking about that right now, because my issue with that is...
I will abstain from conversation, because I don't know much about Batgirl of Burnside.
See, that's the thing, is I've picked up a couple issues here and there. My thing has always been, like, I don't want to read about Batgirl, like, buying a latte. But I get that there are, like... younger girls who may not have had a book like this in the past.
Yeah.
And so I respect that it's for them.
Yeah, I respect that too. And we'll always have our Birds of Prey or our other Barbara Gordon stories, which are cool.
Yeah, and Babs is an amazing artist.
Yeah, Babs Tarr.
Yeah, I love her work, but the book's not for me, but I still just think it's really stupid right now that they're having her go through this... can I have a relationship? And it's like, look at the guy you're dating. Like, her boyfriend completely understands that she's Batgirl. He knows she's Batgirl. Like, come on. Or at least I believe that's what's happening. If I'm wrong, someone's more than willing to correct me. If I am wrong, though, still it's the argument of, like, why are we taking the plot from romantic comedies that have been done for the past 10 years?
Yeah, I think you'll see that recycling of the classic story arcs and the situations. Are you watching Supergirl at all?
I watched like the first three episodes.
Mm-hmm.
I thought I would definitely watch that right now before I'd watch Arrow again.
Really? Oh, wow. We got some Arrow lovers who are going to be upset about that. But okay
here's my thing.
Would you rank them? Would you put all the DC shows on a tier?
iZombie, I'm going to count because it's technically not based... There's no real connection between the book and the show.
Really? Okay.
But I love iZombie. It's my favorite right now because I just feel like the actress is really good.
That's cool.
And even though she looks CW, she can actually act outside of CW.
Nice. I was the male guy. Who's the
Robbie.
Male guy? I think his name's David.
British
guy who was on Heroes and Once Upon
Magic.
A Time. Okay. He's a magic card player, really. Okay.
Yeah, and that's kind of... I love, like, reading his tweets about that. But, yeah, I love him, too. Like, I love a lot of the people in that show, and it's funny because it's just from the same guy that did Veronica Mars.
Right.
And I feel like this is if you took caffeine away from Kristen Bell.
you'd have a zombie.
Yeah, because she still talks like a lot, but it's not. I mean, I enjoyed Veronica Mars, but there were some points where I'm like, okay, this is way too Buffy with the dialogue.
Yep, yeah, it's definitely that you see a direct lineage between those two shows.
But I feel Rose MacGyver, her performance, like I'm not sure exactly how if she ad-libs or anything, but if Rob Thomas is still writing the same way for her, she does a lot better job of executing it to make it not seem like irritating. Like I don't want to pull my hair if she says something
as opposed to the performance that Kristen Bell gave or the way they wrote Veronica Mars. You're saying?
Yeah, okay. Like I love Kristen Bell, but sometimes the way they would talk in that show would drive me insane.
Sure.
I like the story. And I feel like iZombie is a nice balance of that. And you get the, like, brains thing, and you get there's just I don't want to spoil the show.
Okay,
but I love it.
Right on. It's neat because we have a whole bunch of Vertigo shows coming up. We have Lucifer going on right now.
It's too Fox for me.
It started out very Fox. Apparently, it's gotten a little better. I've been saving them to catch up on them, but it started out just like, well, he's not really Lucifer. I don't see any relationship between the TV show and either the fine comic or even where he started out in Sandman. And you and I have talked Sandman a lot, so that's Lucifer to me. You know, he's David Bowie.
Yeah.
but also we have Preacher coming up in a couple weeks, and I'm pretty stoked for that because Preacher is one of my all-time favorite.
Can I swear on this? Can I see the
character? Oh, yeah, okay, we may say bad words on this show.
All right, so Assface looks pretty cool.
What's his name?
Arseface?
There it is.
Arseface.
Yeah, you have to say Arseface.
Arseface.
I shall become an Arseface. He does look cool.
The prosthetics are really well done. Mm-hmm.
I was wondering how that would translate. I can't wait to see the show. Although, you know, I did a column years ago casting it, and I don't know who I put. Maybe Jared Leto.
No.
I hate Jared Leto. But
I'm just going to go rewatch American Psycho after and just rewind that.
I'll watch Requiem for a Dream. Thank you. let him cut off his arm. That's my favorite part. Let's talk about Preacher. You know who the Santa Killers is, right?
See, here's the really bad thing about
it. You haven't read Preacher.
See, I have the stack of like things that everyone says that I should read.
Yeah, I have one of those too.
And it's the thing where it's like, the more people tell me to read it, the longer it takes me to read.
Interesting. Okay.
But at least I have the trades in physical form now, mm-hmm. just sitting here.
What's another one of those where people said, please read it, you need to read it, oh, you've got to read it, and you never have gotten around to doing it?
Well, Rat Queens.
Okay, yeah. That's an Image book that's got a great rep. And I haven't gotten around to either reading that.
Oh, Sculpture?
I don't know what that one is.
I think it actually might be published by Dark Horse. It's a Scott McCloud book, and it's huge. It's like it looks like an omnibus, like a tiny little omnibus. That's what it looks like. That's one of those other ones where I'm like, the more you tell me. Oh, but Invincible for a while was one of those books.
Did you eventually read a part? I mean, I've read yes. up to 50, which is really good.
I think I left off at 120.
See, that to me doesn't count because, you know, we're just waiting to catch up. Walking Dead, I'm still, you know, I'm maybe one and a half through, halfway through the second trade, the second big-ass collection, you know.
I sold all my trades because I was just like, I'm behind. I really don't want to lug this many trades with me when I move.
Yeah, there's an upcoming
16 trades. Based
on just the way I store my books and how to like, why am I buying at least two versions of the same thing? I've got all these books in my garage, my very well protected, insulated garage, but now I have trades too, or hardcovers in some cases. And it's like, wow.
Well, now that they're having the Geoff Johns Green Lantern Omnibuy come
beautiful.
Out,
yeah.
I am getting rid of my single issues because I kept the number one of the Alex Ross cover because it's beautiful.
Yeah.
And there's a couple variant covers from Blackest Night that I am keeping, but the rest I'm just going to sell because just put them in a lot on eBay because I'd rather have the easy omnibus edition to lug around. And that's why I really like Omnibuy and Absolute Editions.
Yeah, I like that too. It's all there in one place and it's on better, larger art. So if you have a Van Sciver, if you have Ivan Reis, artists like that who put so much detail in it, it's blown up, which is nice. Did you read the very last episode, the last issue of John's Green Lantern, the $8 one, the big, big, big one?
From a couple of years ago?
Yeah.
Yes. I thought that was super cute how it had all the letters from everyone, and the one from his wife was really sweet.
And it did have like a 6 feet under kind of ending where, you know, you see the logical conclusions of all the characters. But it's a pretty great run that he did. It's like an unprecedented Green Lantern run. He did so many things with that character.
And he's a nice guy.
Geoff Johns is a nice guy. I think he's I don't know. I feel bad for him that he's kind of stuck to Ben Affleck right now.
Oh my gosh.
It could be really bad. It could be great. Don't get me wrong. It could be great. Read the Batman Earth One books.
I feel like we should stick to, like, paper things for right now, because I've got so many things to say about the movies. Yeah.
So, okay, so cool. So, Marv Wolfen, Denny O'Neill, any other notable writers on your list?
Al Feldstein, because I love reading old EC books. That's, like, those are the things I like to collect when it comes to dropping big money.
Wow. So, yeah.
Shock and suspense stories.
Wow.
Nice. It's my favorite. I mean, he wrote Judgment Day, which
so we're talking pre-Comic Code comics, or
talking about, like, you know, congressional hearing books.
That's pretty cool that you have a background in that, or you were into those. I gotta say, as far as horror, I was a DC 70s guy. I liked the House of Mystery and the House of Secrets and all that pre-Vertigo stuff. It was Cain and Abel, but artists like Neil Adams and Joe Orlando. Really neat stuff. And Swamp Thing kind of came out of there, the original Swamp Thing. So that era is more the horror that I grew up with. In the digests and things like that.
And this is going to be kind of like another guy. Like, it's weird to say, but I mean, I love Jack Kirby as an artist, but, you know, he did have a huge part in creating the early Marvel that I love to this day. He did create the New Gods and stuff, so I gotta put Jack Kirby on that list too.
Yeah, is as far as plotting, I think you're right. You know, scripting, sometimes it was kind of clunky.
It was weird.
But, you know, the classic Marvel way of Stan saying an idea, okay, Jack, draw a comic with God in it. You know, God's
exactly.
coming to Earth. And Jack would basically plot it with his art, and Stan would write the script based on that. Stan would have a very loose idea, and then Jack would basically storyboard it, you know, put the whole thing out in sequence, and then Stan would script on top of that. So, yeah, I agree. That's pretty good.
Like, I feel like he technically does count as a little bit of a writer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say that. That's great.
So,
and he created so many characters. I mean, if you're not writing, he definitely would count for that.
And Big Barb is up in my, like, top 10.
Nice.
So, I gotta give credit for that.
Have we ever had a live action Big Barda?
No, and I don't think we ever should.
Really?
Because I'm a jerk. I am so weird about my favorites. I'm like, I know that there was a Zatanna in Smallville. That was Smallville. I'm very scared of a live action Zatanna.
Mm-hmm.
Unless Riddle, the cosplayer that Adam Hughes, like, based his art of on
I know Riddle. She was on that.
I like her.
Heroes of Cosplay show. She seems cool.
Oh, she was at a panel once, Frank Cho sketching panel that I went to. And she was really cool.
Nice.
Like, she had a lot of entertaining stories, and it really made me respect. It changed my opinion of cosplayers.
Right. Yeah, they are not all opportunistic. I'm not going to use any bad misogynistic words here, but
yeah.
there are just people, you think they've never read that actual character. They don't really know what's going on with that character, but they will get a whole bunch of clicks and on their website, et cetera, so they'll dress up like that. They'll sell their calendars.
Yeah, and I have more respect for the ones where it's like, oh, I'm really into the craftsmanship of it, but I don't know as much about the character. I can respect that.
Okay, yeah.
I can respect that. It's just when it comes to, like, buy my pictures. It's kind of just like, but why?
And every con, like, yeah.
There's someone there like that all the time. But I mean, if a girl's honest and just said, I thought this looked cool, and she has, like, an amazing costume that's incredibly detailed, I'm like, okay, cool. I can accept that you don't have no idea who this is because you did an amazing job with your craftsmanship.
Yeah, and that's a good way to put it, because at least there's the respect of the work. They're taking that seriously. And, you know, that's neat that they can kind of create something out of nothing. I know Yaya does that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not too familiar with I've heard so many things about Yaya that I'm just like, I'm not going to have an opinion because I don't have the time to research it. And I don't want to take other people's words for fact.
Yeah. It's not like she did anything bad, like buying the rights to My So-Called Life.
and sell it. Right.
We can talk about that.
And like committing mail order fraud.
Which is now on HuluPlus.com. I get accused of being a shill for all the things I love, but Hulu is a great one. And because I watch Arrow and Legends of Tomorrow and Flash on Hulu the next day.
I like the no commercial option.
Mm-hmm. It's worth the $4.
I don't know. I watch it. I only bought Hulu last month so I could watch Scandal at work.
Okay. Are you all caught up?
On Scandal?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Are you Team Jake or Team Fitz?
Oh, my God. It's so hard because Fitz looks like someone I used to be in love with. And so I get really emotional watching Fitz.
This is weird because Fitz and I look not that much alike.
No, actually, John.
Okay, John.
John, who we brought up earlier, looks a little bit like Fitz. So okay. I get like, I'm like, oh no, is John going to make a bad decision? Like Fitz is making a bad decision?
And what's funny, you know, it always twists it. It's like, okay, Fitz is the guy that, oh, they're having an affair. That's not right. And so she should be with Jake. Well, Jake turns out to be a total psycho. She should be back with Fitz. You know, they keep repositioning. And someday it'll run out of steam. But I could watch her dad chew scenery all show. He's my favorite.
He's amazing. And that was great to see him in the Batman Superman movie. I was like, oh my God, Papa Pope. Pope. And like my
Joe
boyfriend
Morton,
just looked at me
great
like,
actor. So cool. All right, back to comics. Besides Amanda Connor, and maybe we can talk a little bit about why she's your favorite, but do you have any other favorite artists besides maybe Amanda Connor and Adam Hughes, who we talked about a little bit earlier?
Oh, yes. Adam. I love Adam Hughes. It's weird, though, because like I noticed that my list consists of – I've met some of my current favorite artists, like all of them, and they're all great people. I'm going to save the one that I have the most to say about till the end.
Okay.
But I'm going to say Terry Dodson.
Okay, cool.
He and his wife, Rachel, are incredibly nice. I met them at Big Wow 1 year, and he gave me a free sketch. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, those are people that charge hundreds of dollars for their sketches.
Yeah, I mean, it was a pretty quick sketch, but it's like, you know, for a guy to just make that really quick. And the thing I really liked about him is I mentioned that I worked at a store, and he asked me, like, what I read, how things sell, la, la, la. And I was just like, wow. Like, when he first asked me what I read every month, I was like, he was the first person to ever ask me that.
Yeah.
So I was a little bit taken back, and I was like, and he was awesome. Nice. And then I like Kenneth Rockefeller a lot.
Okay. The one ROQ, that one?
Yeah.
Okay. Tell me more about him.
He's great. I mean, I know he got in some flack for that Teen Titans cover over drawing a teenage girl's boobs. But I think the thing is, I love him because even when he's not doing comics, he does amazing work outside of that. It's very like abstract, and I feel like I used to really like Christian Ward a lot, who does Odyssey.
Okay.
But then, like, I started to notice his interior works were not up to par with what his, like, regular work is.
Yeah.
And I feel like Kenneth Rockefeller is a more evolved version of that.
Okay. So the same, similar style, but so, more of a complete storyteller.
And Kenneth Rockefeller has been around longer. Too, and he's just a really awesome person, and he does this thing on his any social media that he's on. He posts videos because he sketches every single day.
Cool.
In a journal, and he posts it.
That's cool.
And so you get and the thing is, he only does original work for that, and I own several original prints from him. It sucks. I didn't get to meet him though, because he wasn't at his booth at Big Wow, and so I got him his personal assistant. But yeah, he's really awesome. And then to save the last person, because I feel like
Let's see.
You can probably guess.
Well, all right, I will. Frank Cho.
Yeah.
All right, I did guess, but we'll get to him in a second. So, what are some things you would say would make a great artist, or is it just personal preference and things you like?
Oh gosh, I think what makes a great artist, I think, is being able to evolve. To change, to constantly improve. Like, Liefeld would be good if he ever tried. Like, the thing is, Weifel just always stuck to what he did originally.
Yes.
And he never challenged himself or tried to move on. And I think that's the thing where it's like, look, I know I feel bad because I've heard he's a really nice guy.
I think he must be. I think he's right now he's richer than anybody in the world because of Deadpool. But I think he is legitimately a nice guy.
And the thing is, I feel more like self-conscious because I remember one time I just mentioned him in a tweet. No, at Rob Liefeld or anything. Just literally mentioned him.
Oh, so you subtweeted basically, right?
Yeah. I just said like Rob Liefeld or I said Liefeld in a tweet. And all of a sudden, like 2 months later, it gets a like. And any other time I've ever said the name Liefeld on Twitter had a like. And I was like, okay, that's a little bit strange. Mm. Like, but maybe he's a guy who can take a joke. I don't know. Because I know there's guys like Greg Horn who...
Yeah.
He can take a joke. That's why I respect that guy.
That's cool. But yeah, he's the one that he does more the photorealistic tracing kind of thing. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, if you go to his booth at an actual con and see the stuff that he does hand done, it's completely different.
Huh.
But I like it a lot. I wish he would, do more of that. But that isn't, I guess he realized that his realistic work sells to people.
Sure.
So that's what he does. But I think a lot of people just think, oh, he does that. And it's like, if you just pause for a moment and stop by his booth and see his, like, hand-done work, I have a lot more respect for him since seeing it.
Right on. So let's talk Frank Cho and some of the comics. Some of the comics that I would guess it. Some of the comics that you have enjoyed his work in over the years and what he's doing now.
Okay, so this is very strange.
Okay.
Yes, I do consider myself a feminist. Let me just get that out of the way.
Okay.
But yeah, I like Frank Cho because as a girl who grew up reading comics since 1996 and going to the comic book store, you have to realize back in the 90s, a lot of what we were seeing was the Brokeback pose.
Yes. Yes, yes, you did.
A lot of Michael Turner.
Yeah.
And even, no offense to Michael Turner.
Yeah. Even Jim Lee and Art Adams, they would do stuff like that. You know, the arching, disproportionate,
very
it's just kind of
waist, very tiny, except for the boobs. And growing up with that, it was like I was a very, very large child, would be the best way to put it. So there's something about getting older and reading comics and seeing stuff like Sheena and his, like, Brandy and from Liberty Meadows and stuff like that, that I really appreciated because, sure, these women are not, they're not, fat. It's not like, it's not size representation to, like, Valiant's equivalent of Faith right now.
Right.
But it was shocking to see a woman who was muscular and attractive.
Okay.
So, and a book. Like, well-toned.
Like Adam Hughes would draw Barda.
Yeah, but I feel like Frank Cho... Adam Hughes, I feel, draws, like... His women are, like, professional bodybuilders to an extent when we're looking at his earlier work.
Okay.
Those are women that if it was a woman who, ate... Right? Like, ate a lot, like, ate like a normal person, like a normal woman would, and wasn't, like, but still, like, worked out on a regular basis and managed to get some tone.
So, athletic, but not unrealistic.
Athletic. I mean, obviously, I don't know. I've never met a girl that looked, art is art.
Yeah.
So, there's going to be some idealism to it. But to take Liberty Meadows Brandy, for example, she just looks like a healthy, average-sized American female. Because I'm not going to pull out Sheena and be like, yeah, Jungle Girl. No, like, I love Jungle Girl. But I know that, like, Jungle Girl is, like, lives in the jungle, is going to be a little bit more muscular. But I guess Brandy would be someone who is more of an example of his work of, like, an average girl. To me, that's very refreshing to see this thing where it's like, okay, that's not incredibly hard to believe that a woman would look like that.
Mm-hmm. Is it an identity or an identifying thing for you?
I think for me, it is a thing that it's nice to see a healthy balance. Because, I've always had issues with weight. But to me, it's something where it's like, hey, that's something to aspire to, that's a healthy look. versus I'm not going to try to look like a Michael Turner image. Not a good idea. No one is ever going to look like that or look at it. And I hate to say it, I love Sailor Moon. I love Sailor Moon to death.
Oh, yeah.
I have all the replicas, everything, but that is not realistic for anyone to.
Yeah, we haven't touched on anime at all yet.
Oh, gosh. That's, yeah,
that's a big part of the stuff that you're into, which is cool. We can talk more about that down the road. Has Frank Cho done any mainstream stuff as far as Marvel DC that I would know?
Yes, lots of Marvel stuff. He did some of the Secret War stuff. He did some I think he did a couple of She-Hulk covers. He does a lot of Battle of the Atom. He did the first couple issues. Okay. And then he's done a lot of Avengers interior issues. He's done a lot more for Marvel than DC, but DC just recently asked him to do a Wonder Woman cover. Some people are not happy about that.
Yeah. I've been reading there's some backlash about just the way he is in person, I guess. Is that it?
No, I don't think anyone should be angry about him as a person, because I have to be completely honest with you. I have been in his line for like 3 different times, and it doesn't matter if you're the most attractive woman in line or if you are an older graying woman in line, he will treat you with respect and listen to you. And that's what really angers me about people getting personal and dirty and attacking him.
Hmm.
Is that I feel like a lot of people write more editorials than actually speak to him. And I feel like he's the type of guy that if you go to him and you are respectful and you talk to him, he'll probably give you the time of day. He's not going to just be like, screw you. He's not that type of guy. And that's where I start to get myself in trouble, because I think he's always been nice to me. And I've always bought his stuff at every Big Wow until Big Wow stopped happening. But I just kind of feel that I'm an artist, so I'm okay with, I shouldn't say I'm okay. That just sounds very pretentious.
Well, no, I mean, if as an artist, you pick what you like to do. You can express yourself artistically, and you can say other people have a right to do that too. And there's nothing wrong with that. It may just not be for you, and it's not hurting anybody. Is that?
Exactly. And I think that I don't really like. Okay, we're going to get there.
Okay.
We're going to go there, Todd.
All right.
What we talked about during the break. So the thing is, there's something really irritating to myself, and this is all speaking on a personal level. If anyone ever wants to engage me in this conversation as like a person and be civil and respectful, I'm all up for it. That's right. One thing I want to make clear is that even though I may sound harsh, I'm someone that likes to listen to other people.
I think you've earned yourself an army of Place to Be Nation fanboys already.
Yay!
With this one, so who've got your back on this? But you know, I think you're going to. It's comics, and it's got to stop misogyny and harassment.
Yeah.
In comic stores and in comic companies. It's there's no place for it. And, you know,
I'm staying away from Gamergate.
Yeah, I am too. I don't want them on my back either, though.
Well, no,
but
I've met some nice guys. I've met some nice people who say they are Gamergaters, and they appreciated that I listened to them and we had civil discussion, but I haven't anyone else involved in that. It's like, because they didn't really say anything, they just said something rude and really quick. I don't want to count those as people, but the few people I've talked to, they had we got to a point where it was like a civil agreement of, I understand where you're coming from. And while they have different things,
sounds totally, you know,
sounds bad, but at the same time, I understand your frustration and where you would get the idea that this is bad.
Yeah. There are guy splainers, they're mansplaining. That's right. You know, that's a thing now where there's this assumption that men know everything and can explain it to you or can break it down. And actually, you know, he pushes up his glasses. That's a whole big stereotype. We've got to deal with it. We've got to call people out when they are acting like this.
And I think the thing is, we need to, can I plug another podcast or
We can talk about them. Yeah, sure.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
Giant Beast Cast, which is the East Coast version of Giant Bomb Cast.
Hey, have you been on this podcast?
No. They're huge.
We're huge.
They're huge. Like, oh, I love them, but they're pretty big. I think they're owned by CBS now.
Okay. Giant Beast.
Giant Beast Cast, part of Giant Bomb. .com. But the thing is, they had a really good discussion about this a while ago, and all the guys, Vinny, Alex, and Austin, all mentioned that, like, hey, we were pretty crappy when we were, like, younger guys.
Yeah.
And the thing that they said that I've always thought, and I was glad to hear someone who actually has a wide audience say this, is that I feel like a lot of the guys that get very angry, it comes from a place of hurt. And here's the thing is, you'll get me on this, is that I've always been a little bit more sympathetic to guys because I was bullied really badly. Like, I mean, people say that girls have advantages. I was not one of those girls that I felt had an advantage. Mm-hmm. When I was growing up, I had an ugly duckly story. So they mentioned, like, you know, a lot of these guys, when they say these things, they come from hurt, like when we were young and dumb. And I think that people need to acknowledge that while these guys may be very, like, loud and hurtful sounding, I don't want to tell other people what to do, but I think there needs to be a little bit more sympathy for this movement, because I think it comes from guys who, yes, there's a lot of expectations on a woman. I will say that right now. Yes, I agree. There's too much pressure put on women, but at the same time, we don't acknowledge the pressure that we put on some men to an extent of, like, you have to be manly, you have to be this, you have to be that. And while I feel women feel it more often, I'm not going to say that men don't have anything to deal with.
Yeah, I know. I think there are certain things we can't necessarily justify. We can understand their background and where they're coming from, but we also have a chance to educate and to, you know, call things out when we see them or we observe them. And
exactly. And you have to be patient with people.
Yeah.
I just feel like in these debates, if a guy says something, your first reaction shouldn't be you have a tiny dick. That's just crude and uncalled for. And I've seen that, like, it's little things like that that bother me the most.
So I think the censors cut out the part, anything you said after the tiny D part.
Did I get censored?
No, I was kidding. Sorry.
Okay, I was like, that took me a moment to say, because I just think that's so mean when people say that. Like, that is something that, like,
that may be a first in the history of Place to Be Nation comics podcasting.
So. Well, I feel like as a woman, I don't understand, like, what that means.
Mm-hmm.
So for a guy to say something that I don't agree with, and for me to be the first, like, if that was the first thing out of my mouth, it's like, why am I insulting with this guy that this insult that I could never understand?
Well, I mean, comics and wrestling, for that matter, don't necessarily attract the most socially enlightened of gentlemen. They don't. And
and then they attract girls like me.
Yeah. I've met all kinds in comics and wrestling. But as far as where we would say a disproportionate number of guys who just don't have a lot of experience dealing with women on a personal basis. That's it.
Yeah.
That's
and all. The thing is, I at one point was incredibly socially awkward and couldn't talk to men or women. So maybe that's why I'm a little bit more sympathetic to the mm-hmm. whole idea of that, of like shy men who may not be able to feel as good about themselves. And I understand where that anger and that vitriol comes from. And if there's no excuse for them being, like, there's no excuse for death threats. There's no excuse for certain language.
Yeah.
But I think that until we acknowledge that, you know, not all these guys are in the best place. Like, the loudest ones are not in their best place. And I don't know they're up. Like, it's weird with the internet because you never know who you're talking to.
Yeah.
This guy could be like a spoiled brat, or he could have been someone with an awful childhood.
And typically people put their best selves out there on social media. That's not always the case. I know some people who are remarkably, remarkably honest. So maybe understanding and growth can come from just listening to somebody and thinking about what their actual background is.
Yeah, whether you're a man, a woman, or whatever race you are, I think, like, if you don't disagree with someone, just give them a chance to, like, at least explain and listen. And hopefully they will listen back. I know it's really frustrating when they don't listen after you listen to them. But sometimes being a good person isn't always rewarding.
Yeah, well, that's true. Boy, that's sure the truth.
And to get back to the DC harassment thing, I mean, I totally want that guy to get fired. But at the same time, someone on Twitter, I want a shout out, but at the same time, I don't know if he'd be cool with it.
Okay, you can use Pig Latin.
Twitter friend guy.
Okay.
With a robot icon. that would be the best way to put it. He mentioned earlier this week when we were talking about it, he said, you realize that DC cannot fire him for something that happened so long ago.
Right, statute of limitations.
And the thing is, he's like, I think this guy should be fired, but at the same time, they can't fire him because you're all angry 3 years later.
They can fire him. I don't, well.
They can fire, like, the thing is, it's a thing. It opens up DC to a huge legal liability.
Yeah. Well, they're a big company, yeah, too.
I mean, have they said anything yet?
Like, no, there's been no official thing.
They still haven't
said
anything. That's what disappoints me.
It's been a whole bunch of people talking about it, and, like, but there's been no official response, and do you feel comfortable kind of going over, like, summarizing it or putting out a little bit of this so people who don't know what we're talking about can hear it?
Okay, so, yeah, I'll be as vague as possible because I don't want to get involved with ex-employees or people or freelancers that have been hired by DC.
Okay.
I think it was the Outhousers that broke the story, and they're perfectly fine with being named.
Okay.
They broke a story that apparently one of the managers in the Superman department at DC apparently has a large filled with allegations of sexual harassment. Several people who have done freelance work for DC or who have been past employees have been on social media saying that this is all true. There was a specific incident that was seen by several non-employees in a public environment.
And none of these are all allegations.
These are all allegations. There's no photo evidence, but there's several different people who have claimed being at this alleged incident. Someone's girlfriend was grabbed by the waist and apparently stuck his tongue down her mouth.
Wow.
And that is what they're saying. And then a lot of people are coming forward claiming that they had issues with him specifically, or other employees that they worked with had filed complaints against him. And the big thing is that they're saying that there are no women working in the Superman creative department in DC because of his record.
So getting back on track, do you think, obviously it's tougher on women trying to break into the business than it is guys. It's a male establishment and discriminatory practices for years and years. And even going back to, you know, Trina Robbins back in the day used to talk at cons about stuff like this. Mm-hmm. And do you know Trina? Have you ever met Trina?
I've never met her, but I'm familiar with her and I think I follow her on Twitter.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, she was fighting the fight early, early on.
Yeah.
You know, and
You have to respect that because the thing is, like, I always look back on women who were not part of the image era, who were not part of the internet thing, and I can't imagine what their work life was like because I have no idea.
Right.
All I can take for it is the words of them and the people that worked around them.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, but at the same time, I feel like they have a different attitude than the women of today.
Yeah, maybe.
And
so.
I kind of, like...
What's interesting, though, you've had almost a 50-50 representation, or at least a much higher representation, not in creators, but in editors. You've had a lot of women editors over the years. And I think that speaks... Some of the people who've worked on X-Men, you know, you had Louise Jones, who was later Louise Simonson, writing all those books. You had Bobby Chase... in Marvel's direct department. Peter David talks about her all the time. You had women in high positions of power. You had Jeanette Kahn as president of DC for 20 years.
Yeah, and let's get down to a more local level.
Okay.
We're going to call her Stacy.
Stacy.
But okay. You know Stacy.
I'm sure I know Stacy.
She was the one that hired me.
Okay.
And the one that we just spoke about earlier.
Mm-hmm.
I respect her to this very day. I think that she hired me at Comic Store 1, which is what we're going to call it.
So let's say she's as good at her job as anybody else in comic stores in town that I've been to.
No, she taught me how to do retail. She taught mm-hmm. me how to present myself. I mean, I was young. It was my first job where people actually mattered,
yeah.
where people actually cared what I did. No one really cared about how I bagged their groceries at Raley's. Working with her, it's like she taught me everything, and I think that she was an amazing manager. She cared about the customers. She cared about her employees. She truly wanted her store to succeed, and I feel like there are a lot of women behind the scenes who may not get – I mean, everyone knows they're there, but it's like, you know, I don't feel that people realized – when they would come into Store One's second location.
Yeah.
I feel like a lot of people didn't understand how much work and effort she put into making that store what it is. And making... She was just so great. But she did so much. And I feel like, in a way, because she's not the quote-unquote owner or this or that, I don't think that people really understood how much she did.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, I don't think it's because she wasn't a woman. I just think it's because she wasn't like the owner. But I feel like there are a lot of women behind the scenes who may not have this or that title, because it's like, you know, you could have, I mean, what's the name of the woman that runs DC?
Well, like, it used to be Jeanette Kahn years ago. I mean, she was the publisher, basically what Paul Levitz is now, the big boss. You know, and Dan DiDio is in charge of all the content. That's another day. That's more about the
how
he feels about Nightwing and other things like that. But you know, every one of the women who, including Stacy, quote unquote Stacy,
yes.
they've had to fight a battle that you know guys have no idea. They you know, and not every woman is going to be. And this is me overgeneralizing, but is going to be wired to deal with that, and they shouldn't be, because it's a bunch of crap that they have to deal with. There are going to be some, like Stacy, that are going to be, well, it's just, you know, the duck. It bounced water off the duck. But, you know, not every woman is built in that way that they can deal with guys who don't know how to talk to people, he said, delicately, and guys who, you know, whether fairly or not, whether they come from a situation where they have no experience in doing it, or they're wounded themselves, you know, the thing is, Steph, it shouldn't have to be that way. It should be just, I'm here, I'm doing my job. I'm as good or better as you at this job as you are.
My thing is just like, it's weird because I feel like I've gotten, oh my God, this is such a delicate subject. Mm-hmm. And now we're going to hit store two.
Yeah.
Well, discussion. The second place I worked at.
We probably should do this on the next time we get together. As far as tying it back to earlier conversations, I'm certain the fabulous Moolah had to fight battles that none of us.
China.
Yeah. There you go. Boy, that's topical. That's relevant right now too. It's really sad. And that's a unique situation too.
But the one thing I got to say, though, in her credit is that no matter what she said, whether it was true or not,
mm-hmm.
obviously it wasn't very positive about certain people.
Right.
Is that those guys never said a bad thing about her. They just said she's troubled.
Right. Right.
That
they
did
wouldn't
not happen.
Take her calls. Yeah.
And they would not go. And I think that probably speaks to the type of person she was, where they knew that she was a good person,
right.
but troubled. And I don't know. It just is sad that we didn't get to see her in the Hall of Fame while she was alive.
There are. Yeah, absolutely. There are three stories. Like Stone Cold said, there are three stories here. There's Paul and Steph's side. There's China's side, Joni's side. And then there's the truth. And we'll never know. But yeah, that's kind of puts it a little new perspective on this stuff. These parallels that we're seeing in feminism in comics and feminism in wrestling too. So.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry, but there is an equivalent of Eva Marie in comics.
Hmm.
I'm not going to say who it is.
Okay.
because I know someone who is friends with her, and while she seems like a lovely person, just like Eva Marie, I'm sure is a lovely person. Okay. I feel like I'm making a promo right now.
Yeah.
I feel like
Eva Marie, you come down to the ring and we'll talk about it.
Eva Marie, stop getting involved. No, there's an Eva Marie in comics for me. Okay. And
we'll talk about that off the
we'll
air
leave
because,
with that.
because we do have Comics Pro or two listening in on us. So we'll see. We'll see. Okay. And anyway, so we'll tie this together and we'll agree to talk next time, pick up on this. We only got through a couple of our questions, which is nice.
I know.
That's good. We had,
I like talking wrestling.
I think that's the big surprise, too, is that we were able to talk so much WWE and NXT. And have you ever been to a live show?
No, but I'm really hoping for it. Like, I'm waiting to see if anything happens in San Jose, because that would be the closest location to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Down.
So
you're down at a place where they don't get quite as many live shows. And yeah, and you're about an hour away from anything, I think.
Yeah, although I feel like if I went to a show, Bailey would have to win because it's her hometown. And then I'd be like, oh, I already knew it was going to happen.
No. I know you're not on Facebook or you're not much on Facebook, but did you get to see a picture of who I got to meet at WrestleMania, actually at NXT before the show?
I'm so bad. I have no idea.
I got to hang out with Izzy before the show.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So there's a really nice picture of me and Izzy. I marked out to meet Izzy, so that's pretty cool. If you don't know who Izzy is, that's Bailey's little mini-me at the NXT taping.
So I keep mentioning to my boyfriend that I keep wanting to fight. Like, all I know her as is the little girl. Now I know her name.
The Bailey girl. Yeah, her name's
the Bailey
Izzy
girl.
Isabel. And nice, nice mom. And I felt bad because, you know, she didn't know that Bailey was going to lose to Asuka that night. And she was bawling after the show.
It's cool. Okay, little Izzy. You'll learn that's how things work.
Well, cool. I think that about does it for this edition of Weber Has Issues. Steph, it's been great talking to you, and you promise
it's
will
wonderful.
We will continue this conversation and dig a little deeper and find out some more things about you and your experience in comics and loves of comics. And I really thank you for coming on.
Thank you for having me on. I mean, I really appreciate it. Like, since I've moved away, I missed talking to you and being able to talk shop. But I haven't talked shop in a while. And now that my shop is not that good, I really like talking shop.
Yeah, small towns, you have what you have. I grew up in a very small town, too. Well, a small suburb of Sacramento. And my local comic store was, it was a little... little old man on little Main Street of our town, and he had just a couple back issues, a couple boxes.
Oh wait,
back
did you figure out where I got that Adam Hughes cover for $2?
No, I'm not that town. No, I lived in the town that Johnny Cash sang about.
I've heard things about that man.
Yeah. So you know, I bought a couple old back issues, but it was a nice rare trip to the Sunrise Mall Birdcage. Area where the comics was, right?
You used to be able to rent anime from there too back in the day.
You could rent movies from the comic shop. What a world we used to live in.
They had the really good anime too, like blew the Blockbuster section away.
Wow. And now with file sharing, you can have anything you've ever dreamed of.
A Crunchyroll subscription legally.
Legally. Well, I'm looking for Star Blazers. I need to find, I mean, we've had this conversation.
Oh, yeah.
The only anime I watch is Star Blazers. And so
really?
I want the whole run. I want everything. Yeah, it's cool. Star Blazers is my jam. So what else do you like in anime? We should do more quick plugs before we wrap
okay.
up, too.
I really liked Erased. That just recently ended. I mean, I was a little bit disappointed with the ending, but I'm not going to get into that because it will spoil it for anyone who can think through that.
Okay.
I really like Studio Trigger. Panty and Stocking is, and Loop on the Third. The Third is my favorite.
I've heard stuff about that.
Oh, because every time it does, the new series has been fun. Basically, I like everything. Again, Sailor Moon, but it's pure nostalgia. I don't want to say anything about Sailor Moon right now. For reasons.
Hashtag reasons.
See, I like a lot of vintage stuff, too. There's a really cool store in San Jose that I highly recommend. Okay, I kind of don't want to recommend it because there's some really cool stuff there, but forget
right.
it. If you're in San Jose and you go to Japantown, there's a really cool shop run by an older couple who imports straight from Japan.
Nice.
They have really cool laser discs. Don't buy anything that I am saving up to buy, like a certain, like, very expensive Lupin thing.
Do you have a laser disc player?
No, but I'm buying laser discs because the cool thing about them is that they have art that was only made for the laser disc that isn't being used on anything else. So no one pick up the Vampire Princess Miu once, because...
So Laserdiscs, if you don't know.
Laserdiscs
look like giant LPs, giant records. But they're thick, and you had to have a special giant-size VCR-type device to play them. And they had better quality, basically a pre-DVD.
Japanese ones are the best, though.
Okay, Japanese Laserdiscs. Okay, good. That'll be another tag for our show.
They have the best art on them.
Well, I had a great time talking to you, and I can't wait till we reconvene this conversation. We'll see you next time on Place to Be Nation. Have a good night. Good day. Good night. Say bye, Steph.
Thank you.